Welcome to the podcast, where we introduce you to incredible humans who share their journeys with the mission to inspire you to harness your own inner tenacity to drive your life and career forward. And now, your host, Adam Posner.
All right, we've made it. We've made it. And I hate to say, I like to say we saved the best for last. And there's a reason that I say best for last. And this isn't a shameless plug to get Ashby as a sponsor for the show, because I'm going to do that regardless anyway. But I am thrilled to have Benji from Ashby here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for the kind words. Purple shirts everywhere. So I think you guys are doing a pretty damn good job of spreading the word.
Yeah, our marketing team is on it. We have purple shoes. I don't know if they're in the frame or not. But
look at those dunks.
Socks. So we're all in on purple. And it's the conference color as well, so we fit in.
So where did the name come from?
It's a good question. My co-founder and I knew that we wanted to add a lot of products over time, so we didn't want to have a product-specific name. We also want to make sure that the trademark is available, that it looks like .com is available, that it's somewhat unique, easy to pronounce, and we didn't want to spend more than 2 weeks on it. And so we ended up looking at street names, and this was actually a street name between my house and my co-founder's house, and we were just like,
I love it. I think the origin story of what companies are, but let's really talk. I mean, listen, you and I could look around this yep. conference floor right here, and platforms are a dime a dozen. But what makes Ashby different?
Yeah, I don't know how much the average audience knows about, you know, the ATS space, but the really strong focus for us is on data analytics as like the foundation of how you run a good recruiting process. I was a software engineer before starting the company, then was a director of engineering, spent all my time hiring, and had a lot of pain points with the existing tools because I couldn't get access to data. We were spending hundreds of hours interviewing a month, and it was really hard to analyze what was working or what wasn't working. And so really focused on analytics as like the foundation, but then took every part of that process of what like a top recruiting team does and really tried to automate more.
What was one of those, going back to when you're a hiring manager, what was a couple of those data pain points that you said, because I see your wheels turning and you're like, there has to be a better way and we're going to figure it out. What are a couple of those data pain points in the hiring and recruitment flow that really stood out to you that were the impetus?
Yeah, I mean, this was like back in 2016, 2017, and I was working at a San Francisco startup and we were trying to hire engineers. It was incredibly hard to hire engineers at the time. It still is, but we were just like spinning our wheels and like trying to get people into the company. And I noticed this pattern. We had like a lot of on-site interviews and just not a lot of hires coming out of it. And so
it was just like a break point.
Yeah, we were like, what is happening? And so we exported the data. We gave it to our like head of people. They ran a Rave spreadsheet. They came back and they sliced it a few different ways. We actually found there was like this one platform where we're getting most of our candidates and none of them were accepting offers because they were being shopped around to like eight other companies at the same time.
Right. So there's highly competitive.
Yeah.
They were being spread thin.
But it was basically, it took us like 3 to 6 months to learn that. And we were spending all this time, like literally hundreds of engineering hours interviewing people that would never accept our offers. Right. And it's like, man, this is a massive waste of time.
So you have the insight.
Yeah.
When was that aha moment for you? Let me ask you a question just to kind of give a set the state table here. Up until that point, were you always working at companies and working for other folks?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what was that pivotal point when you said, you know what, it's time for us to create something, go out on our own?
Yeah. It's interesting. I think I grew up wanting to start a business. It's like this thing some people just have, you know, when I was 10 or whatever. Over time, my bar for the kind of business I would want to start actually went up. You know, as I'm working in better and better companies, I'm like, I don't want to start like a shitty business just for the sake of starting a business.
No, it's got to be meaningful.
It's got to be meaningful. And so I actually kind of was like, yeah, maybe I'll never start something because I'm just finding interesting companies to work for. But this problem was really painful. I waited actually like a year and a half to see if anything would change in the ecosystem and isolate a pain point myself. Then I ended up talking to about 100 TA teams. Just like, let's make sure that if we got that we have a good opportunity here. And the feedback was very consistent around these pain points. And so
you listened first before you built.
Yes.
And I think that so many founders out there, they kind of just follow their thesis or idea in their head and they lean too much onto fucking around and finding out without actually listening and then effing around and finding out.
Yeah. You know, I had a good paying job. I had a 1-year-old kid, generally a good career. And I was like, I'm not going to just like go off and like fumble around for like 5 to 10 years. I want to research what I'm going to do and have a really high chance of a really high conviction in the idea that I go after.
So I'm going to deliver the punchline first before we build up the story here. But I was having a conversation yesterday and I was talking to them and I was like, oh, Ashby. They're like, are you familiar with Ashby? I'm like, I'm vaguely. And he runs TA for a major company. He goes, if I was able to, I would switch to them in 2 seconds. And I say, why? And he goes, because their level of data analytics is so far advanced than everybody out there. was that always the core foundation of what you were built? Was that the the North Star of the product?
Yeah, it was for sure. It was my own pain point. In these 100 conversations I mentioned earlier, you know, 90 companies that switched ATSs in the last 3 years, and it was pretty much always around reporting and data. So it was very clear that that is where we're going to start. And so it's also a decision when you start building this product from the foundation up, you're building this platform. If you think about reporting and analytics as like a building block from day one, it's way easier to do it well. And so, yes.
So smart. Yeah. What was one of those early challenges as a founder that you weren't expecting because you didn't know because it was your first time around?
I think the biggest thing, and this is probably very consistent with other folks too, everything takes longer than you think. And if you knew how long it would take, you probably wouldn't start a company. So, you know, I think you need to be healthily naive to be able to get off the ground because it's scary otherwise. Outside of that, stuff has worked pretty much as planned. It just took way longer. And maybe the other thing, hiring for roles I'd never hired before was probably really challenging.
And had you use your own product to solve that?
Yes, we did use our own product. And it helps to a healthy degree, but it's still challenging. You still have to learn a lot, right? You know, what does a first sales hire look like? What does a first customer success hire look like?
Sales, and I'm a recruiter by trade. Yeah, I'm a podcaster by passion and by art and by heart here. So I love to talk shop around like the hiring part, but I also love to talk about leadership. Would you consider yourself a natural people leader, or was that something, Benji, that you had to grow into? And what were some of those early kind of...
Yeah, I think somewhat natural. Like I became the captain on my soccer team back in Germany when I grew up, you know, when I was younger. And it's like, I think there was something around, I think I always wanted to do stuff and had high energy and get people to follow along with an idea. So I think that part was there. And then before starting a company, I was a director of engineering. So I did learn like the people management side there. That definitely took some learning. But I think for me, it was helpful that I had managed teams of like up to 20 some people before. So I kind of learned that before starting a company, but I definitely see a lot of people learn it on the job as well.
I love it. Yeah. So let's talk about Ashby for a little bit here. When you're with your sales team, and I'm sure you were much more early on, talk about how maybe Ashby wasn't the right product for a company. And like, how do you flip that around to say, who is this product for?
That's a good question. I mean,
every product is for everybody.
Not every product is for everyone. That's
some people
for sure.
Don't need that level, or maybe they're not asking for it, or maybe they're not going to use it at all. Yeah. And then you're not right, a good partner.
No, that's right. Our focus is for sure on companies that value talent highly, right? So
you would think that most do, but that's not always true.
True.
They say it, but they don't always mean it.
Yes. It's really companies where talent is a big differentiator. And we also usually need to see a little bit of volume, right? If you're like a three-person consulting shop, hiring two people a year,
we're probably not
the right product. But if you're hiring even like 5-10 people a year and upward, and you really care about each of these hires and they need to be the right people you bring to the team, then we're a good fit for you.
So let's talk about some of those quality metrics. What are some of these core KPIs that companies should really be looking at in their candidate outreach flow into hiring and onboarding? What are maybe some of those numbers? And we're not looking for your secret sauce here per se, but anybody out there right now who's building their talent people organization, what are some of those core KPIs that you should really be keeping an eye on that may not be the obvious? Maybe it's not always time to hire.
Yeah.
Maybe it's quality to hire. But what are some of those other factors
from a pipeline perspective? One of our point of views in the space has been that we think modern TA teams work with much more operational metrics. So, you know, time to hire, time to fill, they're helpful retroactive metrics. We're like, once a quarter, I'm building this dashboard for the leadership team, and like, here's our scorecard. But what we see great TA teams do is live in the day-to-day today. And so that means you need to focus on metrics that are actionable. We're like, within a week, you can make a change to your process. And so one of the key things, conversion rates from stage to stage. You know, if you see 80% of your candidates make it from hiring manager screen to onsite, but then only 20% getting an offer, you're wasting so much time with onsite interviews. That's something you can tweak relatively quickly.
Well, I think fall off fall off is such a key indicator.
Yep.
When you have to look at it, you know, really look at that flow of where it's going to. So let's give a little bit of alpha here.
Yeah.
Let's give a little bit of alpha here for everyone's going to listen to this in the next couple of weeks. Give us a top secret project and all the details and the plans of what you're working on.
You're talking about our future product roadmap?
Only 4 people are going to listen to this.
Yes.
No one at this floor is going to listen.
The future roadmap. Well, we actually just launched quality of hire surveys, which I'm really excited about. There was a problem. I feel like it's been a space for many years. Like, how do we connect post-hire outcomes to the things we're doing in recruiting?
Or how do you tie a qualitative to a quantitative metric?
Yep.
That's always been a challenge.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about
the qualitative idea of a quality hire.
Yeah, it's hard. The thing we settled on is we surveyed a hiring manager. You can have your own cadence. You can have your own questionnaire. We do have just 1 to 5 rating scale of like how well is this person doing in a job. Most customers are doing that on a 30, 60, 90 cadence. It's relatively simple, but it really gives you a good amount of like early insight of like, are we hiring a lot of people that end up not performing well right out of the gate? So I'm really excited about that. On a future roadmap, we're just about to launch a massive upgrade to all of our scheduling functionality. That's been a big pain point for me in the past.
Scheduling is always, as in the trenches recruiter, I hate scheduling.
Yeah. I mean, it's not...
It's such a waste of time. I mean, you talk about fall-off points from a process paralysis, and you know, you throw a coordinator in there, make it seamless. And Calendly or any type of scheduling is not always the answer because you're not factoring in efficiencies, time to breathing time in between interviews.
Yep. And complex panels, right? And then whatever kind of realities are of like who needs to be on a panel, who needs to be trained, et cetera. So we really focus on scheduling automation. And there's two parts. It makes your team much more efficient. You need less folks focus on scheduling. They can focus on candidate experience instead. But also you get the turnaround time to be faster, right? So if you get this candidate to offer a week or two ahead of your competitors, it's obviously a huge advantage.
Oh, my God. And one of the biggest things that gets my goat as a recruiter is when companies don't consider HR talent and people, they consider it a cost center versus a profit center. And when they flip that mindset into being a profit center, the biggest game changer in any organization is putting your people first. How are you guys having those conversations with clients?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think fortunately, in the segment we're selling to today, a lot of people understand that. You know, I think there's been a big investment in like talent acquisition in general. Obviously, being pulled back a little bit right now, but I think my VP sales loves to talk about, think about the percentage of payroll you're spending on your tools, right? It's so marginal. Like even for the most enterprise ATS software out there, we're talking like half a headcount in annual pay.
And the impact that it's going to have. It's an investment.
Exactly. If you can move the needle on just a couple of hires. And I think we're starting with like this quality of hire piece to be able to quantify that. That's one of the ways to talk about it.
How much is AI playing into this? And how do you ensure ethical AI and really driving it forward from an innovation perspective?
Yeah.
So that's a 10-part question.
Yeah, that's fine. We really started, so we shipped 3 to 4 AI features in the product today already, and we focus on things that the current LLMs and current technology are good at, and there are things they're actually really good at. Like, I can look at your LinkedIn profile, and we can draw the connection from the job description to our general, how we talk about the company, to what's on your LinkedIn, and we can do it in a couple of seconds and generate a paragraph of personalized text.
Oh, wow.
And we see that work really well, and it's tuned to sound not like, you know, just like 50 paragraph ChatGPT thing, but it's like it sounds really personal, and so that's great. And that's the thing we can do well. But there's things that we're experimenting with where we're like not so sure yet. I think, you know, candidate stack ranking, I think there are real limits to what you can do. Like, I don't think we'll ever get into like, hey, you're 100 and you're 92 and you're 98. But we can tell, like, we can probably tell at some point, like, you don't meet any of the qualifications for this job description. Because that, unfortunately, we do see that with a lot of our customers, that they do get truly unqualified people applying for jobs. And
especially right now, in the advent of the... So let's debunk it right now.
Yeah.
Is the ATS platform automatically rejecting candidates? And wait, we're not talking about knockout questions.
Yes.
We're not talking about certain qualifications that are must-have. But are we there yet where we're scoring, or any of these platforms scoring, an auto-rejected candidate? You're going to hear it from the man himself. Yes or no?
Mostly no. Not entirely no, but it's certainly, there are companies out there, less direct in ATS space, but add-ons to ATSs that are helping with ranking. But the reality is that I haven't seen a company where not everyone ends up being reviewed in person anyway, even after this initial ranking happens,
right?
Because people want a human loop. But what they will do is they'll look at higher ranked people first in case there's ranking place. But even in general, like maybe 5% of companies you're applying to have that, like mostly at a real enterprise scale.
And listen,
but
if you're talking such volume and scale, realistically, folks, companies can't interview everyone. They can't have a conversation with everybody.
Yep.
And they just have to find certain efficiencies. And it's just an unfortunate nature of the business. Smaller companies, same problem. They don't have the resources to meet everybody. So we talk about skill stacking too. And then it comes back to the resume, because how else are you evaluating a candidate?
Yeah.
Do you think that the current modern version of the resume is outdated and it's going to go the way of the dinosaur? And if so, what's the alternative?
Yeah, it's...
How do we define,
you know, on the one hand,
what
it's outdated.
What we do.
On the one hand, it's outdated. On the other hand, like, yeah, what else would you do? I think the way we were thinking about this as we evolved the product is, I actually care less about the skills you list on your resume. You know, it's like, I have experience with Salesforce and JavaScript and whatever. But the kind of roles you held at the kind of companies, that can be meaningful, right? And so if you're like, I was an account executive at a SaaS company that was at a Series C stage, that's valuable information.
Is that a predictor of future success always?
It's not. but it is a predictor of, are you meeting the minimum requirements?
Correct.
Right? So if we say, this is a senior role, we need people that have closed deals themselves for like five plus years.
At a substantial level at a certain monetary amount.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just, folks, that's not saying you're a bad person. That's not saying that you're of great values and characteristics. No. Companies need to hire certain people with certain experience for specific roles. And I think we need to move away from this dialogue. Listen, we all want to, we're human, we're empathetic, we care, but we're hiring for a specific need within an organization, and there needs to be tools and processes brought into place to make it efficient.
Yeah, and in this environment, I think we see this problem where a lot of really qualified people aren't getting interviews, and the reality is just that there are a lot of other really qualified people in the same pipeline, right?
It's a tough one.
It's hard for candidates to see sometimes, but yeah, I agree.
So Benji, let me ask you this too. I assume when folks get to you in the interview process, they've met the skills and experience, and now you're interviewing them for values. So how do you assess in a relatively short period of time if someone is going to be a value add to Edge? I don't use culture fit. For me, fit is the F word to me.
Yeah.
I hate that, but how do you hey, this person's gonna work out well here?
Yeah. It's interesting. We don't have a dedicated interview for it. It's something that's weaved into the other interviews we have. For our company in particular, a thing called operating principles, which is like a bit more specific version of values. We wrote a blog post about it. There are 12 out there. We shared with all of the candidates. And it's pretty explicit about like how do we think people should be working together. And it's really embodied because it is so practical. And so it's really woven into the interviews. You know, if you're talking about engineering past experience or sales past experience, we can get a sense of like, do they demonstrate ownership? You know, do they like working pretty independently? Because that's something we value. Like if you think about collaboration versus independence, we're more on the independent side. And so people kind of know that and screen for it. But yeah, I think it's a hard thing to do. And I think as we grow, we probably need to have a dedicated interview.
Interesting.
That's kind of focused on that.
Let's bring it home here. As a business leader, as a parent, a husband, partner, what's keeping you up at night these days? This is a broad stroke. I'm melding personal and professional. Like,
yeah,
you know, heavy is a crown, right? Like you have mouths to feed on both sides.
Yeah, I love to joke my kids keep me up at night, but you know, which is actually quite literally true, and also cop-out answer. I think I'm philosophically a nihilist. some people misinterpret what it means, but I just don't take stuff too seriously. You know, I think I'm very, very fortunate to be where I am, to be healthy, to have people around me that I love and that I get to spend time with, and so I just don't take stuff too seriously across the board, and that helps a lot.
I love it.
I think you can take a step back and, like, even if at a bad day, it's like, you know, what's going to happen? Like, I'm financially secure. Like, yeah.
So. One of my favorite expressions that I heard in the last year is, we've all survived 100% of our bad days.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you think about it like that, like, we get through our day, there'll be bad weeks, there'll be bad days, but we'll get through it. So I want to thank you so much for joining us here. Everyone out there, please check out Ashby. Check out the people in the purple shirts here. they're building an incredible product. I love to see innovation of this space. Where can folks find you? Where can they connect? Where can they learn
more?
They
can find us on ashbyhq.com. If you know the person who owns ashby.com, we're trying to reach them.
The furniture store?
They're not answering. No. I think it's their last name, so that's a problem. But ashbyhq.com. And you can also find me on LinkedIn and the whole all of our team very active on LinkedIn as well. So under the Ashby handle.
Awesome.
We have a bunch of interesting content there too, if you want to subscribe.
Yeah, and this will be chopped up and we'll be tagging Ashby on that too. Any pro tips for Vegas?
Jesus, stay away from the games. I don't know.
I do not take that advice. That's one of my vices, but you know, responsibly.
Yeah.
If you have any addictions, please reach out for the right help. But we really don't kid about that. But Benji, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this impromptu podcast. I appreciate you. Let's keep the lines of communication open. And we're going to call it a wrap on day one here at Transform. My amazing videographer, Ben, over there is getting ready for his stand-up tonight. So we're going to let him get back to it. I want to thank Ben, Benji, everyone out there.
Awesome.
And enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.
See you soon.
Good stuff. That was awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Over the last 3 years, how much market volatility have you experienced in your business? How many times have you had to hire quickly only to find yourself in a position a few months later with not enough roles to keep your recruitment team busy? Now, what if you could work with a flexible recruitment partner that you could scale up and down based on your needs without compromising on quality or culture? The good news is that solution is finally here. Matcher is a tech-enabled RPO player that made its mark in Europe and is now taking over the US by storm. Matcher combines technology, experience, and flexibility for startups, scale-ups, and corporates to quickly deliver on their hiring needs. Now, whether you're hiring across engineering, go-to-market, or G&A, Matcher got you covered. That's why Matcher's embedded sourcing, coordination, and recruiting services are trusted by companies like TikTok, Booking.com, Miro, Grammarly, Stripe, and more. To find out how Matcher can be your flexible recruitment partner, visit matcher.io. That's M-A-T-C-H-R.io. And make sure you tell them you heard about it on the podcast. Thanks.
Wisdom is forever, but for us, it's time to go. Thank you for joining us. Luckily, we'll be back with our next episode soon, jam-packed with more incredible humans. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and sharing. To join the conversation, search The Podcast on LinkedIn. And to catch up on past episodes and more info, please visit www.thepodcast.com.